It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Welcome to Money for Lunch. Good to have you guys back. It's always good to spend our lunch together. I appreciate it. And, you know, as always, we try to bring you guests, strategies, ideas to make your life and your business better, because that's what Money for Lunch is all about, right? So this week I've been talking quite a bit about making money, creating sales, creating leads with your social media connections. And this works really well in the B2B space, but it's also something that you can use in the B2C space. And simply it's this. Look, there's two types of marketing. There's image-based marketing, something along the lines of what McDonald's uses, their tagline, "I'm loving it." So they're not telling you to go out and buy a McDonald's meal. They're just telling you, hey, McDonald's is cool, and that's why we're loving it. Let me adjust my mic. And so that's image advertising, as opposed to McDonald's saying, come on in and get a Big Mac for 99 cents while supplies last, right? That's a direct response. They want you to take action, and they want you to take action right now. So you can start reaching out to your social media contacts and see if you can help them. So, for example, if you are a consultant, if you are a maybe you're a ghostwriter, maybe you're a copywriter, maybe you're a even if you're a pediatrician, surgeon, you can contact your people and say, this is what I do. This is how I help my people. Let me know if I can help you. You know, that is a very soft way of marketing, very soft direct response marketing. You're probably going to get a bunch of people saying thank you and a bunch of people saying no thank you. That's all right. Now, you can always go up the ladder of conversion is what I call it, right? So the first rung is just that soft, hey, this is what I do. What do you do? Life's great. Then you can say, hey, why don't you get my free report, how writing a book can help you create, can add, what do you call it, add value to your life, right? I'm a ghostwriter. I help people write books. Get my free report on how having a book under your name is a valuable thing. Or I'm a pediatrician, get my free report on 6 ways to keep your kids from getting sick during the holidays, right? And so they go to your website, they opt in for that free report. That's still a soft sale, a soft yes. Then once they're in your sales funnel, you can market to them year round. Keep in mind that only 2% of the people that come in contact with you are ready to do business right now. That's 2%. That means 98% have to be nurtured over time. So that's how you create sales, you create leads, you create conversations with your people on Twitter, on LinkedIn, on Facebook, on Instagram, on Pinterest, right? It's all the same. All right, hey, speaking of writing, speaking of being a best-selling author, let me get my notes in front of me. My first guest today and I apologize because I'm trying to I have a new monitor I'm working with and it's killing me. Anyway, hey, my first guest today is Steve Alton. Steve Alton writes under his pen name LA Knight for this series of books. His new book, Dog Training the American Male. I love that title. You're not going to forget Dog Training the American Male. In the first several comedic novels published by author L.A. Knight, in hopes of both entertaining readers while keeping the wolves at bay. Steve Alton, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you, Bert.
Hey, all right, so tell us a little bit about your background. You know, was being a writer something that you wanted to do early on, tell us how you got from where you were to where you are today?
Okay, well, back in 1995, I had been struggling to make a living. I had actually gone through 10 straight years of college, earning a bachelor's, master's, and doctorate degree in education. But after opening up a business in the water treatment industry, I had struggled to maintain sales and found myself sort of floundering, looking for something to do, trying a lot of different things, everything from selling vitamins on multi-level marketing plans to selling prefabricated hospitals. And while I was struggling to sell water treatment systems, and in August of 1995, I picked up a Time magazine article, and on the cover was the Mariana Trench, which is the deepest part of the Western Pacific, 7 miles down, an unexplored 1,500-mile-long gorge. And the article dealt with hydrothermal vents and the fact that life existed at the bottom of the ocean. And I set off an idea that, you know, when I was younger, I had loved reading the book Jaws, and had sort of become a big enthusiast about great white sharks. And there was always a blurb about the great white shark's prehistoric cousin, Megalodon, which was a 70-foot, 70,000-pound prehistoric cousin that had gone extinct rather recently. And so I sort of married the idea that what if Megalodon still existed in the Mariana Trench? And so I set a goal and went to the library and did a month's worth of research. There was no internet back then. And set a goal that I was going to write this book. And because I had a job at JOB, which I called a just over broke, I had to work on the book at 10 o'clock at night until 3 in the morning and on weekends. And that didn't make my wife too happy, and I was set up with a little word processor in the living room. But I finished the manuscript in 6 months and took it out to literary agents and managed to find one that was interested in it, but wanted about $6,000 to edit the book, describing the editing process as cutting a fish, chopping off its head, chopping off the tail, working directly with the meat in the middle. And I didn't have $6,000, but I did have a 71 Chevy Malibu convertible that my dad had bought me when I was 17. And so I sold the car and paid for editing fees, borrowed a little money here and there, at the time, I took a job working at a wholesale meat company as a sales manager, and 6 days before, well, actually on September 13th, Friday the 13th in 1996, 6 days before we were going to take the manuscript out to market, I was fired. So I went home jobless, pretty much penniless, to support a wife and three children, and my wife was very upset. She said, "What are we going to do?" And I said, "Don't worry, honey. This will give me time to work on my second book." And she about hit me in the head with a frying pan. And 6 days later, Meg
nothing,
went out.
Nothing like the love and support of a spouse, right?
Yeah. And 6 days later, Meg, my first novel, went out under Steve Alton, went out to the six biggest publishing houses in the country. And buoyed by the fact that we had a first-look deal with Disney's Hollywood Pictures, sold for $2.1 million for a two-book deal. So I went from the crap house to the penthouse in one deal. And that started a roller coaster ride that would see me go up and down for the next 20 years, which produced two movie deals and 16 thrillers and one laugh out loud comedy, which just came out a couple weeks ago under the pen name L.A. Night, which you described Dog Training the American Male.
Yeah, what a great story. I mean, there is so many life lessons in that story. We could spend a whole show talking about them because, you know, it's an amazing thing that here you are, you're reading this Time magazine, you get this idea, and you go to work on it. I'm going to call it inspired. You were inspired to write this novel, and you got it done in 6 months, which is anybody who's ever tried to write an article knows that 6 months for a novel is outstanding. You sold your car, and you basically put everything on the line to make that one project work, and it paid off big time.
Yeah, and it's like I said, it's been a roller coaster because Meg went on to become a New York Times best-selling novel. The foreign rights were optioned by Bantam Doubleday and brought in another 30 countries, which they collected the fees on. And you would think everything was great, but the second novel, which was a Mayan counter doomsday thriller called, at the time it was called Fathom, but it was never published because 2 weeks before I was supposed to get paid, Bantam Doubleday's president, or I should say outgoing president, Arlene Friedman, canceled the deal, canceled the second book. They were being bought out by a big German conglomerate, Bertelsmann, at the time, and she was trying to save her job and make her bottom line look better. And so I fell victim to that, as well as a number of other authors did, and my deal was canceled. And so not only was it canceled, but they gave me sort of a black eye in the industry because they had to somehow make me look bad because they were, you know, Meg was a New York Times bestseller and sold 91,000 copies in hardback, and they had just ordered 750,000 copies in paperback. So how are they going to justify dumping me, you know? But they did, and we had to sue them to get the rights back to that book, and which we did. And meanwhile, I started writing a third book, which was the sequel to the first book, The Trench. That was sold to a different publisher that also became a New York Times bestseller. And in the meantime, we settled out with Doubleday and got the rights back to the Mayan calendar story. And I rewrote the entire story and called it Domain, and that was sold to a third publisher. So I have three books with three different publishing houses, which was a little bit insane. And the third house, Tor Forge, which I've stayed with over the years, published my fourth novel, Goliath, my fifth novel, Resurrection, which was the sequel to Domain, my sixth novel, Primal Waters, which was the third book in the Meg series. And then for the seventh novel, The Lock, I noticed, you know, I fell into a bad pattern that the publishing house wasn't marketing the books very well. And so my books were getting better, but my sales were dropping. And so I went with an independent publishing house on the seventh book, The Lock, called Tsunami Books, which was owned by a friend of mine who had an entertainment company. And the book did very well, but the company went out of business a year after the book came out. So I was up to my eighth novel, which was a book called The Shell Game, which I couldn't sell because it was so controversial. It was about the next 9/11 event and the events of the last 9/11 event, which were a false flag. And it basically, you know, named names and was a fiction title, and nobody would touch it. So I put an ad out in the Publisher's Weekly email edition, and it's basically stating that I had recouped the rights to my first book, Meg, and was looking for a publisher for that, as well as for my eighth book, The Shell Game. And 20 minutes later, I got an email from a guy named Tim Schulte, who was sales manager for a small company in Utah called Cedar Ford Books, and they had never published a fiction book at all, but he was a fan of mine, and he wanted to see the manuscript. And to make a long story short, 3 months later, we capped a deal on The Shell Game with Cedar Ford Books, and they had never published, like I said, a fiction book before, and never been in Barnes & Noble. And the book came out to good reviews and a good following, and went to the bestseller list. So, you know, these are just a few of the challenges that I've had over the last 20 years. 10 years ago, I was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease, which was no doubt related to the stress dealing with The Shell Game, which I was getting death threats on a fiction title.
Wow. Well, okay, so let me ask you. Let me back.
Now you know why I like to write comedy.
All right, but I have to ask you this. Here you are. You're Steve Alton, New York Times best-selling author. You've gotten movie deals, million-dollar sales, million-dollar advances. So why use a pen name? Why not stick with a name that's known as a New York Times bestseller?
Well, because it's so different than my other books, which are thrillers. And, you know, I'd like to strike out with a comedic career as well as the thrillers. Because I really enjoy writing comedy, and this is really a really funny comedy, which has actually gotten better reviews than my thrillers have gotten, than my New York Times bestsellers have gotten. And, but it's a, you know, you're right, because it's a definite challenge. It's like starting over again. And it's a new publishing company, new publishing house, A&M Publishers, who've done a fantastic job with the book. And, you know, you're right, it is challenging, but you've got to sort of set up a separate track for a different genre. I'm not making any, keep in mind, we've already announced that my name's Steve Alton, so I'm not hiding the effect.
Right.
Although,
right.
But with the name L.A. Knight, the reader doesn't really know if I'm a guy or a girl writing the book. And in fact, Kirkus Reviews, which gave it a great review, said she is a terrific writer.
I love it. I love it. Well, and of course, we've seen that with, was it J.K. Rowling used initials, and so people didn't know whether it was male or female. And you know, who's the, oh my goodness, speaking of using pen names, oh goodness, I'm drawing a blank. He wrote The Shining. He wrote, what is it, Christine.
You mean Stephen King.
Thank you, Steve King, Stephen King. And so he used a pen name for some of his comedic books as well. Some of his, you know, when he went on a different genre, he did the same thing. He used a pen name. So, all right, so let's talk about...
And he also let it be known that it was him when, you know, when sales struggled.
Yes, yes. But, okay, so let's talk about The American Male. Dog Training the American Male. I love the title, and I just think it's, what do you call it? It's one of those titles that, first of all, it's funny off the top. It's memorable, which I think is a winning, you know, is a winning element of a successful book. So when did you start thinking about writing this Dog Training the American Male novel or book? I mean, was it something that was always on the back of your mind, or did it kind of hit you like the Times article did?
No, this was more personal. I came up with the idea for Dog Training the American Male after a bad argument with my wife. I couldn't understand how my simple, innocent statement had become so misunderstood and created this argument. It was like I was playing checkers and my wife was playing three-dimensional chess. And in the middle of the argument, my wife yells at the dog, which was our German Shepherd, and the dog obeys her command. And I'm thinking to myself later, as I spent the night in the guest room, how is it that my dog understood my wife, but I'm completely befuddled? And then I started having a revelation that, you know what, there's not a whole lot of difference between my dog and me. I mean, we're both simple, dumb creatures, and you know, if the dog can understand, why can't I understand? And then I realized, well, the dog was trained. And if the dog can be trained and men are like dogs, then why can't a man be trained? And that's when I came up with the concept of Dog Training the American Male, which is actually about, the story centers around Dr. Nancy Beach, which is a relationship counselor who hosts a local radio show in South Florida. But the problem with the relationship guru is that her personal relationships never work out, and her ratings are in the toilet, and they're definitely related. So she ends up meeting a guy that's a blind date, a guy named Jacob Cope, who's a Lehman Brothers casualty. He lost his job, and he all he wants to do is be a stand-up ventriloquist. And Jacob's a walking thesaurus of phobias, and now he's dating a psych major, so that's destined to go bad. And their siblings don't care. They're desperate to get rid of them, so they encourage them to move in together. And they really do care about each other. But the honeymoon stage abruptly ends, and the Nancy's sister, her lesbian sister Lana, convinces Jacob to buy her little sister a white foofy dog because it's a pet she enjoys.
Wait. Your mic cut out. You're like.
Oh, I'm sorry.
There you go.
Well, Nancy's sister Lana advises the boyfriend Jacob to buy her sister a little white foofy dog, and Jacob, being a typical man, goes to the pound and comes home with a 120-pound German Shepherd. And chaos ensues, and Nancy flips out, but after hiring a dog trainer, she has an epiphany of her own, which is, what if the dog trainer's techniques can be used to housebreak her boyfriend? And that begins sort of a hilarious social experiment that, you know, pretty much every couple can enjoy and identify with.
Yeah, no, I love it. And you know what? I think for the most part, you're onto something. I think that I love the analogy. You're playing checkers, and your wife was playing three-dimensional chess. And I think that's absolutely a spot-on analogy, because every man who has been with a woman, let's say, I want to say, you know, a couple of months or longer, has had the identical experience where something is said and it's taken completely in a different direction. And I think also we generally, as men, I think we can be trained very much like the average dog, right? I mean, all we want is, be rewarded for, you know, be rewarded for the things we do. And be given a treat every now and then. What, you know, it's just like a dog.
Exactly. And I don't mean this as an insult to men. I mean it as a compliment to men, because men and dogs are basically simple creatures, and we like it that way. You know, if you look at the similarities between a man and a dog, there's no wonder why man's dog is man's best friend. I mean, when we're pups, we both love to play ball. If there's, no toilet around, we have no problem peeing on a tree. We take pride in stupid things like our bowel movements. You know, dogs examine their bowel movements after they're done. What guy hasn't launched the perfect torpedo and given it a good look before we flush? You know, do you think a woman would ever consider doing that? You know, dogs howl when they're happy. Men howl when we score a touchdown.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Dogs and men are both always – we're always getting yelled at for innocent things like dragging mud in the house or occasionally humping our wife's leg when she's not in the mood. And, you know, guys are like dogs, and we like it that way. Just, you know, what do we want? We want sex, food, and to sleep on the couch or watch TV when the NFL's on. That's all.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's the simple things in life that make it, worth living. And I think that, interestingly enough, you know, women, and again, this is a compliment to women, are a little bit more complicated, right? They want love and affection like we do, but then there's it's not as simple, right?
The other day I found myself in an argument with my wife, who I love dearly, about something that I said 18 years ago. Now, I mean, it's like my wife had a built-in Google search that instantly came up with this phrase from 18 years ago. And now I find I'm trying to defend myself from something I said 18 years ago. How do I do that? It's impossible.
Yeah, I love that. Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah, you know what? And I've been blessed. I've been married for 30 years. We have 5 kids together, 2 boys, 2 and 3 girls. I should say 2 men and 3 women now. But and it's interesting to watch how different they are from the very get-go. it's, you know, when I'm the father watching my children, it's really amusing. When I'm the husband, you know, being chastised by my wife or interrogated by my wife, it's not as funny.
That's right.
All right, so let's talk now with Meg. You got it done in 6 months. With Dog Training the American Male, how long?
It was about the same, because I had actually written a script for it initially, and I didn't take the script out, but I thought I would try it as a novel first. And so I sort of had the beats down pretty solidly. So it took about 6 months for that, too.
Gotcha. And that's pretty amazing. So during the six-month period, did you deal with writer's block, or are you able to just sit down and pound it out fairly easily?
Not on that book. I was able to pound that out fairly easily. But, you know, writer's block I define as just a situation where you don't have enough knowledge in your head to write it. So the cure for writer's block is to go and research the topic again, go back to the research, to the bullet points, and put more information back into your brain.
You know what? I love that idea. I love that concept that you're stuck because you don't have enough information. You need to revisit the material, look at your notes, and go from there. I love that idea, because I think that a lot of people, whether they're writing an article or writing a book, get stuck, experience some kind of writer's block, and they don't know what, you know, how to fix it. And the thought of, well, let me just revisit my notes, or let me do a little bit more research, is a great antidote for writer's block.
Absolutely.
Okay, so let's talk about this, because you mentioned that a couple of your novels have been turned into movies, or you had movie deals. What's the status on those?
Well, Meg was, a roller coaster in itself, because it had initially been optioned, as I mentioned, by Hollywood Pictures before the book had been completed. So that was a, you know, brilliant marketing tool from my former literary agent, and was able to generate a lot of interest. The Hollywood Pictures canceled the deal after their president of the company, David Vogel, had been fired. And when a new president comes into a studio, they never take on the projects that the old president had, you know, if they hadn't been greenlit yet, because, you know, if they do well, that makes the old guy look good. Speaking of dogs, one of my dogs is barking, so I'm just going to shut my door here.
What happened was
that we got the rights back to the Meg movie, and then I had a friend who was connected with some major producers, so he showed it to Guillermo del Toro and Louis Levin, who had produced Hellboy, and they
Wait, you're cutting out again there, Steve.
I'm sorry.
There you go.
Can you hear me now?
You got the movie rights back, and you got a friend of yours who's connected. That's kind of what I heard.
Yeah, connected to Guillermo del Toro and Lloyd Levin, who had produced Hellboy. And so they optioned Meg using one of a script that I had written, and they hooked it up with a director, which was Jan DeBont, who did Twister. And they took the package to New Line Cinema, and this was back in 2005. And so New Line Cinema optioned it, but they wanted their own screenwriter, so they hired a guy who was an experienced screenwriter, but who took it in a different direction. He sort of made it into a Moby Dick for Megalodon, and that did not go off well, and the rights were reversed back to me when they couldn't co-financed the picture because they had undersold the foreign rights. But everybody wanted to do Meg at the studio except for the head of the studio, who eventually got fired. So we're with two studios, two down heads of the studio, and Meg still doesn't have an option. So I had met a woman named Belle Avery, who was her forte was raising funds. And she's the only person I trusted with the project. And I said, Belle, you take it. Option it for me, take it out. And she did. And that was in 2008. And Bell, using her own resources and her own money and her own ingenuity, hooked it up with a production company in China, Gravity Producers Production Company. And Gravity put up $150 million. And using my script that I had worked on with Bell Avery. And they took it out to get distributed. And the first place they took it was Warner Brothers, who loved it. And they said, we don't want to just distribute it. We want a piece of it. So they took over a piece of it, put up money. And they, and the long story short is that they greenlit the movie with the director, John Turteltaub, who had done the National Treasure series, and they attached the lead actor is Jason Statham, and they put together really an international, terrific international cast, which includes Bing Bing Lee from China and Ruby Rose, Jessica McNamee, Rainn Wilson, and a number of other terrific cast members, and they've been shooting the movie since August 29th in New Zealand.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. You know what, it's awesome. I love, my wife and I are big Jason Statham fans. He's, I got to spend time with him and his brother and some of the other guys. We hung out together for a day. Super nice guy, very funny, and very down to earth for somebody who is so well known. And he was just a real easygoing, nice guy, had a lot of fun, and got to, you know, interview him. He was one of my, first on-camera interviews that I did. Even before I interviewed him, he's always been a favorite action star. So I'm glad to see that he is going to be doing your movie. That almost guarantees that it'll be a success, right? Because the cast is important. You got some very well known people. It's gonna attract attention, and you know that the studio is gonna put some muscle behind it. So it sounds like it's off to a good start.
If they've got some terrific producers and a great director, and I agree. I think it's going to be terrific.
So at the premiere of the movie, I'm going to be able to. You're going to let me come and interview you there on the red carpet.
Absolutely.
All right. So back to the Dog Training the American Male. Who is this book for? Is this just for guys? Is it just for girls? Is it just for anybody?
Well, women definitely love it, and they get a lot out of it. But the truth of the matter is, it makes a great gift for a guy to give his wife or girlfriend, because they're the one who's going to get the benefits out of it.
And just in time for the holiday season.
And just in time for the NFL season, too.
Just in time for the NFL season. All right. That's good. I like that. All right. So let's talk about this. Adopt an author. What is this Adopt an Author about? Because it doesn't seem like you need adoption. It seems like you're doing pretty good. So talk about this program.
Well, I can always use adoption. But Adopt an Author came about when a strange thing happened when May came out. I started getting inundated by emails from teenagers, and they were all saying the same thing. They hated to read, and Meg was the first book they ever liked and ever finished.
Wow.
And then I started getting email from teachers, science teachers, English teachers, language arts teachers, who were telling me that they were using Meg in the classroom, and it was incredibly popular, and it was the first book that was really getting their students to read, reluctant readers especially. And then I found out that Meg had been named the top selection by the Young Adult Library Services Association. And I realized that something was happening without my support, and I needed to get behind it because I have a background, like I said earlier, in master's, bachelor's, and doctorate degree in education. I'm certified to teach and coach in secondary school, and that's where all this was happening. So I created the Adopt an Author program, which is a 501(c) nonprofit program. And we basically have taken the teacher's curriculum materials and created some of our own, and offer free curriculum materials to all teachers who are interested in the program, free tests, quizzes, projects, posters, and most importantly, contact with the authors through email, Skype, in-class conference calls, or personal visits by the authors, including myself. And we started off in 1999 with 8 teachers that were registered for the program, and we now have over 10,000. And it's a free program, it's a nonprofit, and teachers who are interested can go to www.adoptanauthor.com, all one word, and register for the program. It's free. And I'll send them a packet of information and a poster and get involved.
Oh, that's fantastic. I love this idea. You know, I work with Arnold Schwarzenegger and his charity. This is something I'm going to bring up to their charity because they work directly with kids. And they have like 20 or 30 chapters. I can't remember. They started there. They started in California. And but now they're, like I said, 20 or 30 different cities. And they specifically are there to advance the education of kids. And this might be something that they can use part of their program. And I'll definitely send the information to their, what do you call it, to their president and, you know, and see where it goes. But I love this idea of getting, getting teachers and students excited about reading.
Well, Bert, this is a fantastic idea. You know, I'm very supportive of Arnold Schwarzenegger and his, the governor. The governor is a terrific guy, and I would love to meet him one day. And anything you could do is terrific.
Absolutely, absolutely. He's a fantastic guy, and I'll have him. I'll set it up so you can come out and meet Arnold and take a picture with him. He's a nice guy. Absolutely, absolutely. Well, you know what? This has been a fantastic conversation, Steve. I mean, I love the fact that here you were in a completely different direction, and this article from Time Magazine literally changed your life.
Yes, absolutely.
And I think that one of the things that I want to emphasize here is that there's a lot of us who get this idea, this inspiration to do something, and we kill it by not taking any action, which you could have done the same thing. You could have put it off. You could have said, no, I got to focus on something else. I got to figure out another thing. I got to do something faster because I need money now, or whatever we tell ourselves to talk ourselves out of inspiration. If you would have gone down that road, literally, you know, who knows where your life would have been, but you've impacted millions of people with your books now, and now we have a movie coming out, and who knows where Dog Training the American Male is going to lead to, but it's just amazing to me that one decision to act on your inspiration changed your life and impacted millions.
And the thing that I tell teenagers when I go to visit their high schools and middle schools is that the most important thing is to learn how to set a goal, because mm-hmm. if you don't have the goal set, it's the ability to set the goal and establish the necessary steps to get to your goal and accomplish your goal that keeps you going, because not every day is going to be a good one,
right.
And not every day is going to be a positive thing, but if you take the baby steps, then you'll continue to move toward the goal and achieve it.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, I want to talk about this real quick because I understand also that as an entrepreneur, you partnered with a new publishing company. Talk about that a little bit. When you say you partnered, I mean, are you an equity stakeholder, or are they just now representing you in your new new ventures moving forward? What do you mean by that?
Well, a strange series of circumstances happened that I was able to get the rights back to Meg. What happened was is when the Meg deal for the movie had collapsed and we had the book at New Line Cinema, the publisher I was with at the time, Tsunami Books, that was doing The Lock, the partner was a friend of mine, Ed Davidson, and he said, let's grab back the rights to Meg. And so we made an offer back to the Band of Doubleday, and were able to buy back the rights. And when Tsunami Books went out, the rights reverted back to me. And with the understanding that when the Meg movie would paid out, that I would pay back the publisher, my friend. And so I got the rights back to Meg, and with the movie coming out at Warner Brothers, with the rights, I realized that there was two ways I could do this. I could sell the rights to another publisher. But what I really wanted to do was to get right, because I had made a deal for Dog Training in the American Mail and another book that I had written called Shark Man, and we had trouble selling those books. I went to the wrong publishing house, and they weren't used to doing fiction. They didn't know how to promote the book, and they had the wrong covers, and I had no input on it. And they basically left those two books, which are very good books of mine, very popular books to me, with great potential to die on the vine. And so I said to the publisher, look, I want to buy the rights back to those two books. And he sold me back the paperback rights to Dog Training and Sharkman. And along with Meg, I now had three powerful books that I could go to some partners and say, let's open a publishing house. So we have six partners on A&M Publishing. And we have one of them is Belle Avery, who's the principal producer on Meg. And she's terrific. And she's already optioned Sharkman as a movie. And I had interest from producers on Dog Training, but the book hadn't taken off as a trade paperback, so we redesigned the entire book and put it out a couple weeks ago as a mass market. And I've got a friend of mine who's a president of a major bank who's put up money, and I've got a publicist and the guy who had optioned Shell Game and a number of my other books is our managing partner. And so we've got a really good team. And yes, we do take on other authors beside me. We've got a book coming out under Marie Sutro that's coming out in January. So we're very excited about a number of books that we have coming out. But Dog Training is the first comedy.
Yeah, this is fantastic. And I think that this is a...
And, let me just add one other thing, Bert.
Go ahead.
Meg, I rewrote Meg. After 20 years, I rewrote the book. Added an unpublished prequel called Meg Origins and 17 commissioned images for the interior. And we put out a new cover, and Meg was reissued for the first time in 20 years by Viper Press, which is part of A&M Publishing. And it's got a terrific cover with a megalodon coming out of a giant wave to eat a surfer.
I saw that. It is just absolutely captivating. You want to see more. Because this is an exciting an exciting cover. So I love it. I can't wait to.
And the book is much better than it was 20 years ago because I've evolved as a writer, and I really wanted to go back and rewrite the book and smooth out some of the character plots and add some scenes that are going to be in the movie, and I was able to do that with A&M Publishers.
Excellent, excellent. Well, I can't wait to read Meg. I can't wait to read Dog Training, the American Mail. And I'd love to bring you back. And once I've read Dog Training, the American Mail, talk more about it and have some more fun with you, because this has been such an absolute blast, Steve. And I'm excited for what you're doing. I'm excited about your movie coming out and looking forward to having you back.
Bert, I really appreciate it. I'd love to come back.
All righty. Good stuff, Steve. Thank you so much. We'll have you back soon.
Thank you.
Good stuff there from best-selling New York Times author Steve Alton. And there's just so many nuggets in today's conversation, right? I mean, look, as I mentioned earlier, he followed this inspiration to write a New York Times best-selling book. He could have, like a lot of us do sometimes, is not listen to that inspiration. And he probably would have missed out on everything, right? So he followed his inspiration. That's what you must do. Follow your inspiration. See where it goes to. Even though you've never written a book, even though you've never done insert the blank, fill in the blank, you know, even though you've never done that, that doesn't mean that you can't do it, right? It's just something new, but it's inspiration. Follow your inspiration. And this is, just like Oprah says, follow your bliss. Well, in this case, this wasn't his bliss because he had never done it before. This was his inspiration. And he sat down, he wrote a book, and it launched his career. Think about it. I mean, did you guys catch that? Meg has been around for 20 plus years. And all the stuff has come from that one book. So, and then not to mention he's written numerous other books. Check out Steve Alten, A-L-T-E-N, Dog Training the American Male, available on Amazon or wherever good books are sold. Check it out. Send me your thoughts on Dog Training the American Male. Send me your thoughts on inspiration. Send me your thoughts on who you want me to interview. What show topics should we cover? And we'll do it. I want to be able to help you out as much as possible. I want to bring you some great ideas. I want to help elevate, inspire, motivate your life for the better. Remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch and check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.